Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc, and I get to do book picks this week. Kira Wisner of the Merritt Bookstore in Millbrook, New York, joins us this morning to present some of the finest authors and books that are making their way to store shelves this season. Kira, welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be here with you, Sarah.
Where would you like to begin?
I think I want to begin right here in the Hudson Valley, where we have so many makers, so many craftswomen, so many people making things out of wood and fabric and thread and fleece and yarn. And I have two books with us today. We've just kind of sort of come off in October. We are at the Sheep and Wool Festival with a lot of authors.
Right.
And this year we had two books that were huge sellouts. And one of them is called Making a Life. It's by Melanie Fallick. Melanie has been a maker for a very long time and was also a publisher for a long time. And she has written a book of which the subtitle is called Working by Hand and Discovering the Life You're Meant to Live. And she really encourages everybody in this book to go back to just thinking about feeling with your hands, feeling the objects around you, feeling the textures and the things, and thinking about the things that probably as a child we may have used to do with our hands, and then the kind of things we make time for now. And I think as a mom who watches children hold a device in their hand a lot, even though I do have one daughter who is kind of very much a maker and another one who still is able to dabble in artistic things when she doesn't have to, it's very scary to think about this piece of metal that is in your hand that gives you so much feedback when, you know, if you take a piece of string, it seems much less interesting, but it really can be miraculous. And Melanie takes us through different people's lives in this book and is able to just show the humanity and the passion and the warmth that exists in when you take something and you make it with your hands. And even really exciting stuff, like there's a heavy metal camp in Austin, Texas, where this guy, like, you go and you forge steel. You know, they're really big things you can do with your hands. And then they're also small kind of sort of intimate things. And so this is a great, you know, thinking about that it's kind of close to holiday time, this is an amazing book for anybody who likes to make things and feels kind of crafty or considers themselves a maker, as well as for somebody who may need to back in touch with that part of themselves.
It's called Making a Life, Working by Hand and Discovering the Life You Are Meant to Live. It's by Melanie Fallick.
And then we come to a book by Clara Parks, which is called Vanishing Fleece. And Clara writes all about knitting. And in this book, which we sold almost out of, I think, at the festival, she takes an entire journey across America, really, from wool when it's on a sheep until it's yarn in her hands. And she buys a bale of fleece, and then, you know, she traces the whole thing. And she's also really telling the story of wool and what wool is and how it's important to us. And there's been a lot of talk in I guess in and around about wool, and is it okay to take the wool off the sheep? And she tells the story, I guess the history, which is that sheep used to lose their fleece on their own. And after, you know, 1,000 years of being codependent on humans, we now take it off them, but they actually need it off. So it comes off at a natural point in the life cycle right before the lambs are going to be born and need to suckle. Mm-hmm. And if they had the wool there, it's, I think, very complicated. And you can actually get, like, disease because it can be full of, like, weird manure-ish issues.
Sure.
But also, like, then it would be hot. And so that was fascinating because it did not occur to me that sheep used to roam around and, like, slowly lose their fleece into the air. And so I definitely think that the sheep shearing practices have gotten nicer over the years. And there's actually a really beautiful chapter here where there are a bunch of women who are shearing sheep and there's music playing. And it, you know, obviously everything is not always the smooth thing in the world, but she really shows us how, and also how the people care for the sheep. So really from the exact sheep into the point where it becomes yarn, which involves, you know, carding and factories and making it to yarn and spinning. And it's fantastic. So it's really, even I like yarn and things like that. I'm not actually like a knitter. Mm-hmm. And I found it completely engaging.
Vanishing Fleece, Adventures in American Wool by Clara Parks.
Okay, so let's go now to something a little sadder,
okay,
but beautiful also. We have Michael Korda is used to be the president of Simon & Schuster, and he has written a book called Passing, a memoir of love and death, which is about his wife, Margaret, and a little bit about their love story, which is really beautiful and a little bit sexy in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then through this beautiful, wonderful life, they lived together. And then unfortunately, her diagnosis and her dying, her passing. And we are going to have Michael come to the store on November 30th. And he's going to do a little bit of a talk and a signing. And we're actually going to give a portion of the proceeds of that afternoon to Hudson Valley Hospice, which was the hospice that was so important to them as Margaret was dying. And to be able to experience one person's death in a book is a gift. It's a gift he gives us, because when you have to experience it with someone you love, the first time is always very challenging and you don't really know anything. And it's very hard to read something and then understand it and act it out. And I actually had this experience where I had read things, and yet when it happened to me with my mom and she was dying, you know, some occasionally little pieces of things come back and you think, oh, and that's actually great. Like, there are things you can read and remember and it can make your experience better. And then there's the flip side of just when you read something like this and you remember all the other little parts of it and how hard it is. And but it's still this active thing you have to do every day. Like, when someone's dying, you have to be with them and you have to be attending. And it's both a journey, an emotional journey, and a very active physical one. And this book tells the story beautifully. So we're really pleased that he's going to come talk about something so important and so personal with us.
It's Passing, a Memoir of Love and Death by Michael Korda. The event is on November 30th. And we'll, of course, post a link to that when we post the list online at WAMC.org.
Thank you. So this book's been sitting around for a couple months, and it's amazing. It's called How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. And what I like about this book specifically is that it's not enough just to say, like, I'm not racist.
Right.
So you have to actually be anti-racist, which means speaking up at times when people might not. And it means understanding yourself. And one of the, I mean, I will say right here, so racist, to be an anti-racist is one who is supporting an anti-racist policy through their actions or expressing an anti-racist idea. And I watched people in the store one day pick up this book, and they're like, oh, you know, I'm not racist. Like, I don't need a book on how to be anti-racist. And I didn't say anything right away. But then I engaged these people in a conversation, and that nuance became clear to them. And she actually bought the book, which was great, which I wasn't really even trying to do. I just wanted her to
trying to point out there is a difference there between not being racist and being anti-racist.
Right. Yeah. And if you think about just not being racist, it's really very passive in the end. And so being anti-racist is active. And one other thing he says in the introduction that I loved is, this book is ultimately about the basic struggle we're all in, the struggle to be fully human and to see that others are fully human. And he understands that all of us have both racist feelings at times and anti-racist things at times, everyone included. And it's the understanding that balance within yourself and how to actively work against what we see in the world and our specific world that is racist that's important. So
How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. Joe did talk to him on the book show, and the interview's online at WAMC.org.
Like, amazing. It's mm-hmm. been great.
Yeah, he's great.
Then I brought this super weird, awesome Cinderella Liberator by Rebecca Solnit. Rebecca has been writing for years feminist and memoir and politically active, and she has taken the original Arthur Rackham illustrations for Cinderella. He did the original ones. Like, he's was born in the 1800s, so
okay,
he's not been around for a long time.
I never thought about how there, of course, is an original Cinderella somewhere.
Right.
It just seems like it came out of the sky when time began.
Right, and it's a story that has so many riffs off of it, especially now. And actually, Stepsister, which is one of the books that I did when I came on in the summer, was also a really wonderful extension of the Cinderella story that felt very fair to people. And this is another one that feels also both fair and almost like being anti-racist, like super aggressively challenging all these stereotypes that we have. And in it, Cinderella is able to kind of understand, you know, what her responsibility is, and she has an amazing fairy godmother who gives her lots of choices, and the prince is somebody who also wants her to, you know, be in an equal relationship, and the stepsisters eventually realize that they behaved terribly poorly, and the one person in the end who really bears responsibility and never feels better in this is the stepmother, who is, I guess, the oldest person in the story who was actively mean and spent a lot of time being kind of awful. But what I love about this is that we read these fairy tales, and even when we talk about alternative fairy tales, there's usually one part that's alternative or the ending is different, where this entire story is completely turned around and super empowering to everybody in it, including the lizards who become the footmen and the mice, and some of the mice who want to change back and some of them who don't. And I think that this is an amazing gift to give any child and really any grown-up, because even as I read it, remind you of the possibilities, almost like the Melanie Fallick book. Like, you forget there are these things that we can do. And as active as we all are in our lives and making choices every day that are liberating, there's probably more we can do. Part of me this morning thought about, like, children and parents and the way we kind of sort of serve our children in a way as much as that. And that felt like another spin on Cinderella that I hadn't thought of yet.
Cinderella Liberator by Rebecca Solnit.
Then I brought this super cool little magazine. It's called This Is What Democracy Looks Like, which anybody who went to one of the marches or saw one of the marches was something that people were chanting and felt really clear and empowering, I guess, to overuse a word this morning, but I was feeling that. Mm-hmm. And it's a graphic magazine that explains democracy in a more accessible, more modern way. It has the Supreme Court justices. It talks about smaller states versus bigger states. It gives really concrete examples about little towns. Like, there's a very small municipality in Vermont called Hartford that's 10,000 people. Every year they have a town meeting. So that's a really active, direct democracy, little tiny thing. And then it talks about LA, which has 10 million people in one, you know, county. So this is something that definitely should pop up in schools, but could also be a really cute little stocking stuffer just to help explain our system to grown-ups.
Also, right.
And, you know, and children, I would say, from about 8 or 9 up, in a really, really clear way. And it was produced by the cartoonstudies.org, which is a really interesting little place that draws out concepts.
This is what democracy looks like.
For fun, mm-hmm. at the end, I have bought the Newish Jewish Encyclopedia. This is a holiday time, and actually this year, both the Christmas and Hanukkah holidays fall very close together towards the end of December. And the Newish Jewish Encyclopedia is both informative and amusing. So it lists everything and gives real answers to things, but then has people in who are just pop culture Jews or things that people talk about. You can look up, you know, stress and gangsters, and then you can also look up like Shiva to understand, you know, what that is. Mm-hmm. Latkes, which they call an absolute pain to grate, drain, and fry, but when you get troubles, what you get for your troubles is a scrumptious Hanukkah hash brown. Like, so they're funny.
That's very,
you know,
real.
Some of the definitions are really amusing.
Yeah, that's funny.
Actresses and things like that who you know, people who you don't always know are Jewish. But it's kind of sort of big and it's shiny and it's just really on the back they call it, right, the unorthodox guide to everything Jewish. So there's a lot of double entendre going on in the whole book. But it's a really fun one, and it would be also a great gift for someone.
The Newish Jewish Encyclopedia, from Abraham to Zabars and everything in between. That's great. Do you want to do late migrations?
Yeah. Okay. I brought also today a book that I loved. It came out right at the beginning of the summer. It's by Margaret Rankle. She writes a lot of the nature pieces for the New York Times, and also sometimes writes about the South. And this is her memoir. It's also about, you know, she's had a mother who's died, and she's reflecting on her whole entire life. And it's mixed with her nature love, and also as she kind of tracks her love of nature from her whole life. So she talks about things that she's seen in trees from when she's little until she sees now. And it's filled with artwork by her brother. And the cover is also done by her brother, and he does kind of collage work. It's also very, you know, obviously on the nature theme. But she's able to write in a way that connects you to the outside world and to your inside world. And it is a mirror into the thoughts that we have, I think, about death in general. And then she funnels it into this specific journey that she had with her mother, and then just her, you know, life journey. And I just, everybody I've given it to has been so grateful, and they've come back. And memoirs can teach. And the subtitle of this one is A Natural History of Love and Loss. And, you know, there are echoes of, you know, the life cycle in all of nature that we see before us every day, like right now with the first snow and seeing the leaves on the trees and how everything like that dies. And that happens in our life. And it's sometimes nice to be reminded how close those two things are.
Late Migrations, A Natural History of Love and Loss by Margaret Rankle. It's a fantastic list. Kira, thank you so much.
It's so good to be here.
Merritt Bookstore is in Millbrook, New York, or online at merrittbooks.com. Kira's list will be on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.